A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. HelloFresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition Smart Bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
Hey, Dave.
Yeah, Randy.
Since we founded Bombas, we've always said our socks, underwear, and T-shirts are super soft. Any new ideas?
Maybe sublimely soft.
Or disgustingly cozy.
Wait, what?
I got it. Bombas. Absurdly comfortable essentials for yourself.
And for those facing homelessness.
Because one purchased equals one donated.
Wow, did we just write an ad?
Yes.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase.
The following is a presentation of the Four Center podcast feed.
From the center of the galaxy, this is the Four Center podcast feed. I'm Ken Napsok.
And I'm Joseph Scrimshaw, and sadly, you would normally be hearing Jennifer Landa saying, and I'm Jennifer Landa, but she's not saying that. Maybe she's saying that somewhere, but she's not saying it on this recording of Four Center. Jennifer is doing a really cool, really fun thing that I don't think we're allowed to speak about, that is a conflict with recording. So we are both sad that Jennifer isn't here and absolutely thrilled for Jennifer that she's not here, because what she's doing is really cool. So Jennifer will be back, right, Ken?
You explained that perfectly, better than I would have. I probably would have slipped and let it know what's happening. So thanks for the reminder. Yes, she's doing something really cool, as she always does. She's so talented and gets some wonderful opportunities. We're so happy for her. And then we had to change our schedule because Joseph and I are both doing some traveling this weekend, and we're going to talk about that. So the episode's out a little bit late. A conflict arose, but that's okay, and we're so happy. So I know I love our comments, especially on the YouTube side. There's some wonderful, dedicated fans that just always say anytime they hear Jennifer's voice, a cheer goes up in their soul and hearts, and it does for us too. But Jennifer is out today, so you're stuck with these two lugs talking Star Wars news. That's what we're gonna do.
Yeah, it's a special lug episode of Four Center News. Very excited.
Lunk and lug in the morning. Joseph and Ken got your Minnesota mornings covered here.
Ooga.
Sports and weather coming up in a bit. We want to remind you today's podcast is brought to you by Audible. Get a free audiobook download and a 30-day free trial at audibletrial.com/4center. Over 180,000 titles to choose from for your iPhone, Android, Kindle, or MP3 player. A little bit later, we have our 4 Center recommends an audiobook we think you should try out on us. And look, it's We got a lot of book news today, and you're going to want to try an audiobook out on us. So pay attention to that recommendation. All right, kids, take notes. All right, let's get to the weather. No, let's get to, I don't know why I'm making fun of morning radio where I started my career, but it deserves to be poked. Trust me. We are going to catch up with some Star Wars The Life Adventures. And well, Joseph and I both had a lot of adventures. A lot of plane flights, a lot of events, a lot of fun things. So, Joseph, I'm sure Star Wars found you where you were.
It certainly did. And yeah, a full disclosure, this would probably be a longer entry of our discussion of life in Star Wars adventures because yeah, sometimes we're like, yeah, I found an action figure. Yeah, I read a book. But this week we had big life in Star Wars adventures. And Star Wars did find me, and it was really gratifying and fun the ways that Star Wars found me. So the life adventure, the fun thing that I did is I went to the H.P. Lovecraft Film Festival and Cthulhu Con in Portland, Oregon. And you know how we all have like different little pockets of our lives? The Lovecraft Film Festival is this weird, specific pocket of my life. Like back in 2004, some friends wanted to make a film to submit to the Lovecraft Film Festival. First time I'd heard of it. They had this vague idea of what if there are these two kind of cultists who are kind of a comedy duo, a little bit of like, what if Laurel and Hardy worshipped horrible elder gods? And my old friend Timmy Wren and I played these characters. We submitted several films to the Lovecraft Film Festival, and these cultist characters became really popular at the film festival. They eventually invited us out. We did a couple of live shows there as these cultist characters named Chuck and Dexter. And it's this weird pocket where, like, if I go to this theater on this weekend, I am quite well known for being a funny cultist. I haven't been there in years and years. I'm going to be making some more short films in general. So I made a short film specifically to submit to the Lovecraft Film Festival. They accepted it. So I got to have this really fun, really rewarding weekend. It was really great to see my film, do a Q&A afterwards, meet some other filmmakers. All of it went really well. Right now I might be still submitting that short to some other festivals. I haven't decided yet. Eventually I'll put it on YouTube. But one of the ways that Star Wars found me was that the short I made is about somebody who is doing unboxing videos on YouTube and Cosmic Horror finds them.
Sold.
So a bunch of people really had questions about, you know, about the nature of, you know, YouTube or content creation. And so that was really gratifying. So I had a lot of conversations about like, well, I only do a little YouTube, but I do this podcast, but my friends do YouTube. And there's all that. That was really fun and really exciting and gratifying. We did a surprise bit as these cultist characters, Chuck and Dexter. We weren't announced because my friend Tim was there as well. And we did a short bit where we took the host's microphones away from them during an introduction of the cult horror film Reanimator, and the star of that film, Jeffrey Combs, was a guest. So basically we were the opening act for Jeffrey Combs. And you know, when you meet, you know, cool people that you like, you never know. Sometimes they're, you know, very just professional and sometimes they're really kind and complimentary. So like we had some jokes, you know, not at his expense, but just, you know, acknowledging that he was there. And you never know how people are going to feel about that. So we got off stage and Jeffrey Combs, amazing for a lot of his cult films, but also like he's played like 8,000 characters on Star Trek. He's just amazing and very distinctive. So got off stage and this very familiar voice I just heard go, well, what was that? How am I supposed to follow that? That was weird, but that was very funny. So it was really nice to get the very nice compliment from Jeffrey Combs. Yeah. So that was kind of like, that was the reason I was there. That was all of the fun and rewarding adventures. But then in my heart, it was almost Star Wars all the time, Ken. Because I know I've mentioned this before on the podcast. When I was quite young, we lived in Portland, Oregon, where this convention happens, this film festival happens, the summer of 1980. So in some ways, Portland is always to me the city of Empire Strikes Back.
Right. You know, yeah.
It's where I got the Yoda action figure that is still on my desk as I podcast here. And this time when I was visiting Portland, I don't know why, I was just really connected to that time and those feelings. And I had this like, I'm going to I'm going to buy a Star Wars action figure, because this is really where my love of Star Wars action figures, you know, took deep hold and roots. And the first thing I did when I got there, I took the train to my hotel. There was a GameStop store. I walked in and there was a phenomenal Ahsoka action figure on discount. So I got to have I went into Portland and bought an action figure, and it was the very first thing I did. So it was this really rewarding full circle Star Wars moment.
That's great. That's great. It also reminds me that you spent you were in Portland during Mount St. Helens, which is one of those fascinating little tidbits of your life. I love
it's so great. Yeah, because we could see a corner of Mount St. Helens from like our kitchen.
Wow.
And then when it blew up, we couldn't anymore. And wow. I was talking to my dad about this and kind of getting some of his more adult memories, you know, because there was ash everywhere and we had to, you know, wear masks. And there was on the news reports about the man who lived on Mount St. Helens, mm-hmm. and they were trying to evacuate him and he wouldn't. And I was talking to my dad and it's like, you know, this is really good for me to remember why I had such a hard time separating fantasy from reality. Because at the same time, my dad was like, okay, dinosaurs aren't real, but yes, there is a volcano just a few miles from us and it blew up and lava is everywhere. And so is ash, but dinosaurs aren't real. You know, like it was a weird thing to differentiate as a kid.
Sorry. I probably sidetracked you. I always forget that about you and I love it.
It's a great detail. Yeah. I have one other thing I specifically wanted to share because it so relates to our first Force Center journey. I had lots of talks with friends new and old about what they did like in Star Wars, what they didn't. That's always good to get a little refresher about just hearing people's opinions. All the conversations were really friendly and respectful, even when people disagreed and all that. But the founder of this film festival, great guy named Andrew Migliori, spent a lot of time with him, and he told me this great story. He was a little older than us when A New Hope came out. I think he said he was like 12 or 13. He saw a commercial for Star Wars, and there's Luke and Leia swinging over the chasm in the Death Star, and then it cut to a shot of Vader looking, and the head motion follows the swing, is what he explained to me. So he saw this commercial, and he thought it was one scene. And he thought, oh, cool, in this movie, this guy and this girl are going to swing over a giant 90-foot robot. He thought they were swinging over Vader's giant head. And he went into this film going, I'm excited to see that 90-foot robot. And then it was like, film was pretty good, but I really wanted a 90-foot robot.
No robot.
And I thought it was so funny because we talked so much about how our expectations shape our reaction, and to have this like just totally understandable, you know, misreading of the way this thing was cut. And I'm here for a robot, and I got robbed.
You know, and it's a reminder that trick is still employed. Even like Rings of Power going into the season, they had a great trailer where everyone's looking up at a comet. And it's like no one was looking at it. Well, one or two were, but like, you know, and it's thematic. This is why I love, you talk about our Force Center journey. This is why I love the looking at the themes, even in trailers, and not going, great, everyone's going to stare up at this comet.
Right. And the way things are cut together to make it sound like one character is talking to another. And I've gotten so used to that now of like, that line of dialogue might not be in the movie. That might just be for the trailer. That person might be talking to, like, you know, their meal as they finish it, not talking to another character. Who knows? So always great to be aware of your baggage, particularly when you need a 90-foot robot to be in the film or it's going to disappoint you.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, yeah. Thank you, everyone, for and Ken in particular, for letting me go on a little bit. It was a really great weekend with just lots of layers of emotion, and Star Wars was a huge part of it. So thanks for letting me share. And I am very excited to hear about your weekend because it was really fun to be on adventures on opposite sides of the country. And we even got some nice tweets being like, you guys are both somewhere. Are you in the same place?
Yeah, I want to thank also our Force Center listeners for allowing us to kind of squeeze an Andor report in based on my flight schedules. And I saw someone tweet like, oh, only an hour and 4 minutes. Like, that was all on me. I had to get on out of here. We'll dive in deeper. But I was in New York City. Now, New York Comic Con was going on there, but I didn't hit the con. It's a good con. I haven't been there in a couple of years, but it's bigger than San Diego, but feels more spread out because it's in one corner of the city up there in Javits. So we never touched that, never saw that. I was down there are out there to do comedy with Mark Ellis at the New York Comedy Club in the East Village, which is a great club. I love performing there. We do that show roughly every year. But it was, fun. And you know, I didn't have as much time to roam around the city as I like to. I finally did get up to Central Park. All my times in New York, I've never taken the time to go to Central Park.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, I'm a big Beatles fan and all that kind of stuff. So, you know, you get off on the train, the C train at the 72nd Street stop, and it's right there at the Dakota, where John Lennon was murdered. And then you go across there to Strawberry Fields. And, you know, you kind of feel, as a longtime Beatle fan, that's you kind of feel some energy and feel some emotions. That was great. But then wandering the city in the Tribeca area, Grace and I were wandering. I went to the Ghostbusters firehouse, which I don't have an emotional connection to like other people do. I've only saw Ghostbusters late in life, as is was always discussed over in the Schmoes Know world. But walking around, we passed a store. I wrote it. It's Rag & Bone, which the cool kids will say is a high-end jeans company. I get my jeans at Target, so I don't know. But, I mean, we're talking, you know, high-end New York kind of fashion store, right? In the window, full-sized First Order Stormtrooper.
What? In jeans?
Not in jeans. No, just in a glass case. Full size, and the shop wasn't open. I would have gone in, and I don't know if there was a plaque or anything explaining did John Boyega buy jeans here? I don't know. And it just, and Grace was laughing. She's like, what does Rag & Bone have a stormtrooper in there? And it was just in the, and it wasn't facing out of the window. Like, it was just in the shop, but right behind the front window there. And it was just one of the most bizarre, like, Star Wars is truly everywhere moments where, oh, there it is. You want some fancy jeans or do you want to look at a stormtrooper? It's right there for you.
Were you at all tempted to go in and go like, I'm not criticizing. I'm just very curious. Why is there a stormtrooper in your window?
I wanted to. It was closed at the time. We were trying to get the morning coffee, but and then I couldn't, you know, didn't have time to go back. But I thought about it. I just wanted to wander in. Be like, hi, I need some $400 jeans. Actually, I'm kidding. I just need to stare at your stormtrooper costume. I don't know why. And then the comedy shows were great. Thanks to anyone who came out. It was a 4 Cent listener. Got to say hi to a few folks there. But it was nice it was the first time I performed at the New York Comedy Club there without it being a Schmodown heavy crowd. You know what I mean? Where you're making real folks laugh. Not that the Schmodown fans aren't, but they're there for you. This crowd was there for comedy. And so it's a little bit more of a challenge. And so it was a lot of fun to try to connect with people who maybe aren't familiar with me as much. And so I had that. And the club has a photographer, great guy named Sam, and me and Mark Ellis, the headliner, also a great guy, Kyle Lewis, he's always on the show. We're all nerds, and we all have some nerd jokes, some Star Wars jokes. I wear a Rebels hat. I wore my Brian Ward Mothma shirt on stage, though a lot of people thought it said Mothra, which I understand, but it's Mothma. And then the people who got it they came to me afterwards like, oh my God, a Mothma shirt. I love that. Nice.
And it's the Metallica logo, right?
Yes. Yes, it is. I said, go to Brian Ward on TeePublic. So Brian, I hope you got $2 more coming your way. but afterwards I'm outside, we're taking some photos with the club photographer and he like kind of leans into me and he's like, man, so you like Star Wars, you wrote a book about Star Wars, and I said, I got a Star Wars podcast, Force Center, all that kind of, you know, you go through kind of the, this is what I do thing. And he just leans in and goes, man, hey, what do you think about Andor? And I kind of give my quick answer, which is always cautious, right? You don't know what you want to do. Like, and he's like, I love it. He kind of stops and he looks and he leans in even closer and he's like, I just don't have anyone to talk about this stuff with. I can't just say I want to talk about Star Wars with people. And, you know, you and I have experienced that before. I think Jennifer's experienced that before. I think 4Center listeners have experienced that before, where you get outside the bubble and there's some people who pick up on the fact that, oh, you like Star Wars. And regardless of what they think about it, it's just that sigh of relief. We're like, oh, I can talk about it. And I forget in 2022, which is pop culture is at the top of the charts, man. I take for granted, I guess. It was just kind of fun. We had a quick little conversation about it. Didn't have time to go in too deep. He's loving Andor, loving a lot of the things that come his way. But it was just fun to have someone be like, oh, an oasis of Star Wars talk. Yes, thank you.
Yeah, no, it's so great to get out of the bubble and talk to people who have different interest levels or different relationship with Star Wars, you know, or maybe not as all in as we are or some of our listeners. And then also it's nice to be in a completely different space and find somebody who is in the bubble, right?
Yeah.
Who is deep and like, do you think Wolfie Larson's going to show up? And like,
Well, it's a reminder too of, you know, again, we are in a very different age. I mean, absolutely is a different age where all this stuff is very easy to watch, talk about, discuss, get to. But, you know, it's a reminder too. It reminds me of the old days. It's not as bad, but you know, it's the old days where you'd be like, hey, is that a Star Wars t-shirt? Are we the same? can we talk about it? And just to see that it's still out there. And I love to help. I love to be that person for someone, you know, of, hey, I see your hat or hey, you said that joke on stage. And it's, you know, a reminder of, still talk about it, still be proud about it. Cause you never know who's going to, take inspiration from you just going, yeah, nerd stuff. I like it.
Yeah, it's fun to talk about. Yeah, just the fun to talk about. That's so great. Of like, and if you can keep it fun, right? Even if you maybe disagree on what parts that you like, as long as it's just like that fun back and forth, that is just golden.
So that was kind of the highlight. A lot of fun. Back in, still kind of tired. I know you're kind of tired. So.
Oh yes,
yes, we are. So on that note, let's get to some Star Wars news. For those that are just tuning in for the news, here we go. It's some news. It's book news. It's book news. And I don't mean to sound disappointed in that. I'm glad we have new stuff, but this is all book stuff here, which makes sense because New York Comic Con is generally, correct me if I'm wrong, Joseph, it's kind of where the Star Wars publishing goes to play.
Yeah. I mean, there's certainly announcements other places, but it feels like often New York Comic Con has something big.
Yeah, and it could be, you know, Del Rey's kind of, I think that's one of their big base locations out there in New York, so that makes a lot of sense. So New York Comic Con brought us a lot of book news, as I said, both in the High Republic and the larger saga. Here is the publishing panel. There's the publishing panel and the High Republic specific panel. These reveals were on the publishing panel. Delilah S. Dawson has a book coming out called Inquisitor, Rise of the Red Blade. It's centered around an Inquisitor named Iskat. It will follow who survived the Order 66, and she joins the Inquisitors to find the truth about her past. So that's kind of all I was pulling from that. There, if there's other information, I didn't look because I kind of don't want to know until the book comes out. But nice cover, reveal of this. Joseph, thoughts on this book, that title, and what do we hope to learn about the Inquisitors?
Yeah, this was a really, really great announcement for me. I was really excited about this. It's been a little while since we've got an announcement of what is coming from Del Rey that isn't the High Republic, right? We got some big reveals, and then some of those exciting books have come to pass, right? Brotherhood and Shadow of the Sith. So I was kind of waiting for what's next. What is the non-High Republic kind of era and characters they're exploring, and why? Because that range kind of goes all over the timeline. And I was thrilled for this, for the actual book, which I want to talk about. But you and I have been reading these books and covering them for so long. I think there's also like an excitement for specific authors, right? Like, I'm super excited for this book, but I'm also just excited for Delilah S. Dawson to be doing some more Star Wars. She wrote Phasma, which is a really different book we talk about. She wrote Black Spire, which is a little bit of a follow-up to some of the characters in Phasma. And also just like one of those books that could, that people could be really have blinders on about and say, it's just an ad for Galaxy's Edge at Disneyland and Disney World. Right. But it is so much more. And I think the reason that I'm excited for the return of Delilah S. Dawson is she always kind of brings a little bit something different. But she's also, this is a weird thing to be really excited for, but as an author, she is great at pain. both physical and emotional. She is great at getting you invested because you deeply feel the actual stakes, the agony, both physical and emotional, that characters are going through on their journey, right? And that's such a great pairing with somebody who used to be a Jedi and has now gone through the torture to become an Inquisitor and is now wrestling with what it means to be in the grip of the dark side. That's all about pain, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So the first thing I'm excited about is Delilah S. Dawson and the take that she might have on this. I got some other thoughts about the kind of Inquisitor part of your question, but I want to pause and see if you have any Delilah S. Dawson thoughts.
Well, I appreciate that pause, sir. Yes, I admit that. Delilah S. Dawson won me over in a big way with that Phasma novel. As I've said before, years ago, about halfway through, I thought this might be the first Star Wars book I put down. Not because it was bad, but I was just like, I don't know what I'm reading. It's something else. It wasn't what I was expecting. And I just, you know, we got to review it for the podcast. Something clicked in and I just got it. And I love that book. And love what she did with that character. Talk about, you know, pain and trauma and suffering, and a character that is coded as a villain, definitely, but also you learn a little bit more and you start to understand. And it doesn't mean they're still not a villain, just means you have a bigger picture of who they are and their story. I just loved it. And then you write the Batuu book. Talk about this with my pal and our friend, you know, Billy Patterson, Billy Business over there at Fandom, Screen Junkies. He loves that Batuu book, the Galaxy's Edge book. Same as me, and you're right. It could have been so bad. It just could have been bad.
Mm-hmm.
We got a book about Galaxy's Edge, Batuu. We've seen this before. You and I, just Princess and the Scoundrel could have been bad. Oh, let's all take the Halcyon. I totally get the cynicism. But Delilah S. Dawson comes in and just turns that book into something so much more. And it's such a reward for people that you know, push past it and tuned into the book, so to speak. So I love it. So yeah, on that level, I do just want to celebrate. This is fantastic. It was kind of an out of left field. Like, oh, wow, we got this. It makes a little sense following the existence of Reva now in the Star Wars mm-hmm. canon. Not that I think it's similar, but just kind of like, all right, yeah, let's dive into the Inquisitor stuff. So yeah, I'll start there too, and I'll pass the baton back to you. But yeah, I'm just excited to get another book from her. Because I think I'll follow Delilah S. Dawson into the Star Wars battles, no matter what she is asked or wants to take on.
Yeah, absolutely. I think part of what's so powerful about Black Spire is it's this little picture of why do you choose to fight, right? Because the First Order mm-hmm. is coming and starting to put the boot down on Batuu. Vimerati is desperately trying to build a resistance presence in kind of a dark time with very, mm-hmm. very little hope, very little resources. And it is really that kind of intimate story of who stands up against tyranny and why and how and what do you sacrifice for it. It's a little view into kind of the heart of that side of Star Wars of when do you stand up and why. Mm-hmm. So if anybody hasn't checked it out, I highly recommend it. But I think I'm still hoping for a Phasma follow up. I do want to say that. Because this is a pulp universe, and I do not think Phasma died from falling near some flames. Come on. Not in Star Wars. So I'd still be happy for a Phasma follow-up. But getting back to this actual book that we're talking about, yeah, I'm really intrigued by the journey of the Inquisitors from being this kind of idea that gets introduced in Rebels, and now we've gotten to really get into the heart of this idea that they're fallen Jedi,
mm-hmm.
tortured into serving the dark side, put in this unwinnable rat race to, you know, rise up the ranks. And we've seen this in video game form and really got to experience the pain of Trilis and Duri, you know, in Jedi Fallen Order, right? And then we got to experience it in television format with a different character of Reva in the managing to, it looks like, at least for now, at the end of Kenobi, escape it, right? So there's a part of me, it's like, okay, we do know elements of this story, but to get to experience it in a novel form, in the book format that can really live inside the heart and the mind of the soul of this, of the tortured person and make you feel it. I'm very excited to get that Inquisitor story there. And then the biggest thing to me that's exciting about this, Ken, is that the one kernel of what is this about that we get is fascinating, of saying that this character, Izkat, joins the Inquisitors to find the truth about her past. Somewhere else that might sound generic, but in this specific context, that is something that a broken Jedi has a potential to be very angry about, right? Of where did I come from? Who allowed the Jedi to take me? Do I agree that the Jedi should have taken me? Do I agree that the Jedi should take any children? They don't do it without the parents' permission, and they always let the children decide as they grow up. They give them an off-ramp anytime they want to step away from the Jedi life, right? Mm-hmm. But you can see somebody who has gone through torture, gone through hell, needs their anger in order to function and survive, to zero in on where can I put this fury? everything that happened to me is the Jedi's fault because they took me and they didn't have any right to take me. I don't know anything about where I'm from, and I'm going to use this opportunity to find out where I'm from. Now, I'm speculating that could maybe not be the story, but that's what I hear when I hear a broken Jedi who is now an Inquisitor wants to find the truth about her past, that it's about where was she taken from and who had the right to do that.
Yeah, and again, going to Delilah Dawson's writing, is just trust her to approach that. I don't want to say the right way, but I kind of mean the right way. Approach it in a little bit of justice for the Jedi, a little bit of pushing back on the Jedi to find out maybe things about them. And I'm excited about that possibility. And like you said, because it's novel form, this would be, to me, the most time we've really spent with the Inquisitors. And we've spent a lot of time with them. But to have them evolve from the Grand Inquisitor, when they kind of showed up in Rebels, I don't know if I was a huge fan of it. I got why you couldn't have Vader in every episode. You need a substitute villain, so to speak, which sounds, you're like you're slagging on it a little bit more than I mean. From there, it's grown. And you're right, Fallen Order had some great stuff. I'm such a fan of the character of Reva and what she represents and what she could mean. But the inner workings and how it works and the rank system and who they are and how they get their names and why do we know Reva's name and maybe now Iskat's name from a distance we don't know yet in the story? Why don't we, aren't we familiar with the other ones as much? I want to know how it works. And we love the why here, but this is a big how that I'm excited to find out, if that makes sense.
Absolutely. I think, yeah, they start out in Rebels having this great, like, yeah, we can't make Vader look like a tool.
Yeah.
Like, they always get away from him, right? And they do such a great job in that of Rebels of making him so scary. But then as this idea really develops, the Inquisitors become this fascinating, rich story mine because in order to be tortured into becoming Inquisitors, they need a defining wound to motivate them. Yeah. That becomes fascinating of what wound is motivating each of these characters and how do they deal with it? How do they address it?
And that, yeah, and that's, you're right. The specific, what's your wound? Maybe that's, is that a hashtag, kids? Is that a, maybe that's what the Inquisitors ask each other. Hey, what's your wound? And that's where it could be, because it's somewhat similar. I don't want to say similar to Reva, but her tale is her wound. And that's, I guess that's the point I'm trying to make. This could be really fascinating. This is what could set it apart. And it could be a lot of what I'm intrigued by what you're pitching here of going back to why at two was I taken from my village or my city or my planet? Like why and what happened? And I don't necessarily think this is being pitched as a redemption story, right? Could be, but I don't know. The rise of the Red Blade sounds like it's going to be red through and through. So I'm excited about that.
Yeah, no, he's super excited for this one. I think I would have been excited for if it was just like Delilah S. Dawson writes Mystery of Star Wars, I would have been excited. Mm-hmm. But this Inquisitor idea with that specific hook is really intriguing.
Yeah, yeah. And we'll dive into that one when it comes on out there. I forgot to write down the release date, but I imagine 2023 at some point. Sorry about
that. We will have plenty to read before then, whenever the actual date is. And I'll scroll here and see. It just says arrives in 2023. So you nailed it, Ken.
Oh, phew, nailed that one. Well, in February of 2023, a Marvel miniseries, usually it means about five issues, will be arriving, written by Justina Ireland, and it will be about Saena Staros. This is kind of all I have on this one as well. I'll just start here, Joseph. This is long overdue, but also things happen like wizards. They arrive when they want to. Justina Ireland writing this character, Saena or Saena, depending on how you want to say it. Saena Staros is just a perfect mix for me. I really love Justina Ireland's work in the High Republic. That's how I got to know her more and more. She's done some great comic book work. And this is a character, Saena Staros, once for a brief moment known as Saena Solo, and how that just destroyed Star Wars discourse for about a month back in 2014 or early 2015, if memory serves. This is long overdue. I'm excited about this series. What about you?
Yeah, absolutely. I have not read all of Saena Staros's adventures. I've read a lot of her stuff in the earlier run of Star Wars Marvel comics. I really felt like I got to know the character even more when we listened to and discussed the Dr. Aphra audio adventure.
Yes.
That focuses a little bit more on her younger life and her connection to Aphra. So I really like the character. I think some of the stuff I really loved about her appearances of kind of her a little bit of her philosophical battles with Leia about the nature of rebellion and what they're all trying to accomplish and all that. But I mean, I think honestly, for me right now, because of the stories I've read, some of my knowledge of Sana is her relationship with Han and Aphra and Leia, you know, mm-hmm. and the rebellion and all these things. So I'm really interested to have her have a solo story that's just, you know, really about her and who she is, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. We've learned a lot about her through her relationships with other folks, including a great, I think there's a one issue in the Marvel mainline with her and Lando running each other. Mm. It was really great. But to have her centered and have not that we don't get things from her perspective. She's very sure of who she is. She knows who she is, I think. She's always been a strong character in that regard. So you get to know who she is. But to spend, even in a comic, to spend five issues inside her head from her point of view and see all the other characters interacting with her versus her interacting with them, that's big value in this.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I'm very excited for this one. And it is honestly nice for me sometimes when it is just the single shot, not single shot, the limited series. So I can wait until the five issues come out and read it. I had so many Star Wars adventures to talk about at the beginning of the podcast. I forgot to say that on the plane to Portland, I finally read just the five issue mainline thing of War of the Bounty Hunters. Mm. And I really enjoyed it. And I'd been holding off because of all of the tie-ins. And I thought I'd have to read everything else to understand it, and I didn't. I could see obviously the off ramps to where you're going to get other people's stories and more details, but I really love just reading that five issue adventure.
I almost wonder if I would have enjoyed that a little bit more if I just read the main War of the Bounty Hunters. The off ramps confused me and overwhelmed me at times. So.
Totally understandable. So yeah, this just being most likely five issues of Sana Staros, I'm all in. Mm-hmm.
All in indeed. Like I said, comes out in February 2023. Other little bits of information here. There's an upcoming in-universe guide to the High Republic called Star Wars The High Republic, Chronicles of the Jedi by Cole Horton with character studies by Ario Anindito. And this looks like a great resource for those fans of the High Republic, of which I am and you are as well, who occasionally can get a little overwhelmed by the entire era with the amount of books and comics and audiobooks, timelines. Now we're jumping back 150 years in this phase. I admit sometimes I love the High Republic. I love certain characters. I love the events. I love the books. I just sometimes want a checklist. And this seems to be like more than a checklist, a great resource. Your thoughts on this book and in-universe guides in general.
This book is an answer to deep desires that I think I've expressed on the podcast. Yeah, I'm really, really happy for that. There are, great resources out there, you know, from digging through Wikipedia to obviously our friends at Star Wars Explained have done some great summaries of High Republic stuff. And I feel like I'm really happy that they are officially publishing what they want us to know, what they want to remind us of, right? And I'm sure the book will be done in an artful way that it makes it very entertaining and kind of, I'm sure it has a little bit of an arc in and of itself. But the idea that it's just literally a reference book, like just like, hey, when it's time to dive back to the High Republic, I can flip through this and be reminded. That's great. Because to me, it makes the High Republic complete because it's offering the best of both worlds. When you and I have been sort of deep in the High Republic and books are coming out close to one another and we're reading them and I was getting caught up in the comics, I would have these really thrilling moments where I realize like, oh, this character is going off to do this, or this character found this thread that's going to pay off in this book. And you get that fun high of being like, I'm really immersed in something, and what is like casual mention to me has this greater meaning. And like, that's the joy of this kind of interconnected storytelling. But there's just so much storytelling in life and so much life in life that I put the High Republic down for a month. And I forgot like how to eat, you know, I forgot like it goes so fast. There's some characters and some moments I love and remember, but I need the reminder, you know? So this is the best of both worlds. You can dive all the way in and have those discoveries And then for me, I can have these reminders when I need them in this book.
Yeah, I like that. And I like what you said of just kind of admitting that and being okay with that, right? Like, I think we're, you know, especially in Star Wars where trivia, knowledge, and there's a lot of gatekeeping and a lot of people face being on the outside of those gates and being put there by other people. But sometimes we can put ourselves there if you just feel like, I can't admit that I don't know where Elzar Mann is right now. I don't know. And that's something we always want to fight against. And these kind of books are fun. They're great coffee table books. But yeah, this is one that I might need to pull down off the shelf before I start a new book because it's so wonderful. The High Republic era just goes so many places and so many stories. And I never feel the loss. You're right. You can get like, oh, that probably, I haven't got to that comic yet, but I get what's happened and why it's connecting to this main novel. They know how to handle it. Mm-hmm. That's what makes it kind of fun. And anyone out there listening, just because you don't know all the trivia answers doesn't mean you can't just sit back and enjoy it and can't ask for help in a book like this. Let me find out where Buriaga was before that event.
Yeah. And one of my personal favorite characters in the High Republic is Reeth Sylas, who loves books. So I'm just happy for Reeth.
You can live life like Reef. That's a good thing.
Like Reef, exactly.
Like Reef, like Reef. See, I need to look at his name again. All right, there we go. Some other announcements before we take a quick break. Star Wars The High Republic, the lightsaber collection. You and I both love that lightsaber collection book that came out that had, Stellan's lightsaber, I think. Now we got an entire book on lightsabers from the Star Wars High Republic era. We got Star Wars 100 Objects by Kristen Baver. And more info on Star Wars Timelines. It's coming in February 2023. Another book, speaking of resources and timelines and where all things fall. Another big book I'm looking forward to there. Anything jump out to you in those final news notes, Joseph?
Oh, those all three sound great to me. The Star Wars, The High Republic, The Lightsaber Collection. That's a flip through and look at the pretty pictures, read the paragraphs book. And I can't wait to see a Vernestra Rose lightsaber that she can also change into a whip and look at all the details there. I'm saying the things I remember about High Republic.
Yes. Yes.
I'm sorry. Go ahead.
No. I love that. Yeah. Good to see all that on a nice, pretty picture book, like you said.
Yeah. And Kristen Baver always does great work. I think she's such a great person to write a book like this. The sample page they had of her 100 objects was Yoda's Blissle, the weird little wooden flute that he wears around his neck. And that's such a perfect sample. I think Kristen Baver has such great understanding of, at this point, if you're going to do a book like 100 objects, what are some things that are beloved, but maybe not talked about or discussed as much? So I'm excited for that. And when I saw that, I was like, I can't wait to do the ranked episode about our top five favorite 100 objects.
Yeah. Yeah. That's going to be that's a great call. I love that stuff.
And then finally, Timelines is huge, right? This is, I think that one might physically be next to me while we record, right? Because I think it's going to be great to be able to cross reference stories. And I think, with the timeline of a lot of, in particular, all these stories that are happening during the Age of Rebellion, the Age of Darkness into Rebellion between Kenobi and the time jumps in Solo. And exactly when did Rebels start? And exactly when is this in relation? How long before the beginning of Rebels is Andor? You know, I still want plenty of fluidity. It is still a mythic story, you know, and I don't want it to be locked down of like on this exact minute, these two things absolutely happen at the exact same time, but it doesn't look like it's going to be that. That's not the spirit of it. Right. But to be able to just quickly flip through a book and go like, oh yeah, when Jyn Erso was this old, this is how old Han Solo was. Without trying to quickly do math on a podcast, which is the last thing on the face of the earth I should be doing.
Yeah, I agree with that. Now, yeah, sometimes you get those questions, whether, you know, be in Twitter or in real life, like, hey, when is it happening? I'm like, I don't know, all the same time. They're stealing the fruit on Lothal while, Andor's going through this. But now we can know. Yeah, I'm excited for that. Yeah, and, it's funny, on the 100 Objects one, too, yeah, that's a great sample, that Yoda item there, because that's one that, like, you and I have grown up with our entire lives, and I think I've probably thought about it, but never had the answers, and now I'm going to get it, and there's immediate value on that for me.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think I saw it in text somewhere of like somebody was writing something about Yoda's blistle. And I was like, what kind of filth is this? Like, oh, wow, it's his flute. Cool. You know,
good old blistle talk. So that's going to be coming our way. A lot of information. Love it. You know, Star Wars books, whether it be the novels or resources books, a big part of our love of Star Wars. So it's always great to know more. Are on the way. We're going to take a quick break. More book news on the way. But before we do that, we're going to recommend an audiobook to you. Joseph, what's on our recommendation list today?
We are still recommending Padawan by Kirsten White, because even as we get excited about more books coming, we're trying to catch up with the books that exist. This is a young Obi-Wan adventure that came out a while back, and we're still hoping to find time to get to read it and discuss it. But you can, of course, listen to it for free.
You can download your free audiobook today by going to audibletrial.com/ForceCenter. Again, that's audibletrial.com/ForceCenter for your free audiobook. All right, quick break on the other side. Let's look at some High Republic-specific book news. Stick around for more Force Center.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition Smart Bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
One size fits all seemed like a good idea for clothes. Nice
dress. It's a t-shirt.
Until you tried it on. Same goes for your healthcare. That's why United Healthcare offers a variety of flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. So whether you're between jobs, coming off a parent's plan, or even missed open enrollment, you can find the plan that fits you best. Find out more about United Healthcare coverage at uh1.com. That's uh1.com.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit BetterHelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Welcome back to Force Center. We are here looking at Star Wars news, breaking news from a long time ago. As I said, at New York Comic Con, there was more publishing news. The High Republic panel brought some what I'm calling minor news, and I don't mean to make that sound negative. I just feel we already got some big announcements. We know what's coming, but now we got some clarifications from some fun stuff. Nonetheless, for folks to get excited about the next phase with her. So we got a first look at the cover of Lydia Kang's Cataclysm novel featuring the son of the Chancellor, Axel Greylar, one of the great Star Wars names, I'll say, holding a blaster and a lightsaber. In my notes, I put blaster and a rifle. That's not right. It's a blaster and a lightsaber. Don't write your news notes when you just got off a plane. The book arrives in April 2023. And Joseph, I'm just going to go through some of these news that we can pick at what we want here. Okay.
Sounds good.
Also coming in April 2023 is a Tessa Gritton middle grade reader, Quest for Planet X. There's a pulpy title. And we now know that the story will find the characters going to Batuu. Ooh, that pops up every now and then. Kevin Scott's YA novel, Path of Vengeance, arrives in May 2023. And the cover has Marta Rowe, might know her and being related there to Markian Rowe, with Jedi in tow and possibly the nameless all around them, or they're walking towards the nameless, or it's the shadows of the nameless. The nameless are those creatures that we don't know a ton about that can cause a lot of problems, like death for Jedi. And for the first time ever, all the Republic and the High Republic authors are coming together for an anthology of young adult tales connecting to every era of the High Republic. This arrives in July 2023. So, Joseph, that and anything else that I might have missed, what jumps out to you in this bevy of High Republic reveals?
There is a couple things that I'm very excited about. But the big one for me is Path of Vengeance by Kevin Scott. I'm so excited for this and the cover reveal. Kevin Scott's one of my favorite Star Wars writers in general and of High Republic in particular. So at first I was just like, oh, yeah, I forgot that he was writing the YA book, and I'm really excited to see his take on it, because the High Republic does a really good job of, even though the story is all connected, and you could kind of even not even pay attention to the age designation if you didn't want to, because it's all connected. But the YA novels, I think in particular, are really making an effort to still be YA novels, right? Which means you're dealing with younger characters coming of age story. So at first I was like, yeah, I'm just really excited to see Kevin Scott really, really doing the YA book. But then I looked at the cover, and this is where my adventures of this week become full circle, because this is some straight up Lovecraftian Cthulhu business happening on this cover. Kevin Scott is a lover of pulp, is a lover of horror, has, we talked a lot. He's the one who brought in the Drenger, because he was like let's bring in these darker, pulpier horror, cosmic horror type of ideas into this great High Republic storytelling. And the Nameless, even there is that's a Lovecraft name, the Nameless. This idea of these sort of creatures that force you to see your reality in an entirely different and often nihilistic way, that is straight up cosmic horror, straight up Lovecraftian. And then this cover is very closely related to a famous Lovecraft novel, At the Mountains of Madness, where there's an exploration in Antarctica and horrors are discovered. So the fact that this book is, obviously it's the Roe and the Jedi and, the Path of Vengeance and what is the history behind them, of the Roe family and the Jedi. There've been all these suggestions of what happened. Is this part of what happened? So there's that level of High Republic excitement. But then this image is just currently to me unknown Jedi, Marta Roe, about to enter a place where they should probably not go and encounter things that they probably should not encounter. On the floor is a sigil, some ruins that absolutely look like something that are etched into the stone to keep these horrific monsters at bay. And our characters are about to cross that which they should not cross. I'm so excited. This is the entire weekend I just had at the CthulhuCon coming into Star Wars. And I know that is very deeply on purpose from Kevin Scott, because he brings in all these other influences. So very excited.
I mean, I love this already on my own, but if feeding off your excitement, like I'm the Nameless, is awesome there. No, this is... I'm looking at the photo right now, and there's even more meaning now hearing your excitement for it there. And I'm with you too. I think Kevin Scott is a fantastic Star Wars storyteller. And this is one of the reasons I really do love the High Republic era. It can do things like this. And not that other things can't in Star Wars. We think there's some good gothic horror and Rise of Skywalker, mm-hmm. Exegol, all that kind of stuff. But this is very direct. You're right. We're going to roll some dice while we play here on this one.
Some sanity is going to be lost.
Yes.
This covers right before they have to roll for sanity. And I'm sure someone is going to miss their throw.
Yeah, and it's just exciting, and it's truly mythic, and it's truly out of this world, and I'm saying that for Star Wars, which is already literally out of this world, right? It's a galaxy far, far away, and it seems like something different and fitting for this time period. I'm excited. I'm excited for this, and excited as the stories start to connect. I really love, we could just talk about this next phase coming up. I'm really excited to go back 150 years or so. Mm-hmm. There's something about that I really love. And I think, and I don't know if I would have when they launched the era. I would have been like, we're time jumping. Okay. I'm excited. And this even makes me more excited. And that's all the word. I just got the word excitement. I'm that's all I can say. Describe this photo. It's a great book cover.
Yeah. Yeah. I can't wait to be excited with you when we actually mm-hmm. read it. The other thing that jumped out for me, you already shouted out the title, Quest for Planet X. I know that title had been released before, but just seeing it again, this would be one of my few critiques of the High Republic. Are you ready for that? You know, every once in a while, people are like, we want to hear things you don't like. Here we go. Brace for impact. Yeah. I don't know if it is an artistic choice, if it's a publishing marketing choice. With some exceptions, I think a lot of the titles of the individual books are a little too generic for my taste. Mm-hmm. To the point where sometimes, like, I have a hard time remembering the titles of the books because they definitely relate to what happened, but they can be a little bit, they're a little generic. Quest for Planet X is not generic. I'm never going to forget the title of that. And yes, it is absolutely in the pulp vein. You know, this could be a Flash Gordon title, and I am a big fan of that. But I also just like that it's a little bit more distinctive, and it's going to be easier to remember.
Yeah, I like that. Yeah. And I can't help but say this one is Quest for Planet X. Like, you have to read it like that.
Well, now I look forward to reviewing this one and hearing you say that 72 times.
Yeah. What's your immediate gut reaction when you hear they're going to Batu?
I was really excited for that because I think that's been the promise of Batu, is that it has been there forever, and it comes and goes in relevance, and it, you know, changes. And we've already got a little bit of that, of being kind of introduced to it in two different timelines in the Thrawn book that happens there. It obviously, when you physically go there, it is in the Resistance First Order War era. So I'm really excited to see it in this era.
Yeah, I'm with you. I haven't reached any cynical level with that yet. I really haven't. I think before going to Galaxy's Edge, I was curious, you know, and we talked about the Delilah S. Dawson book, but even in the Thrawn reference, and yeah, there's moments where Padme's kind of ordering a drink that you can order. Like, I'm fine with it. And then after going to Galaxy's Edge, like, I went on a cold, rainy day, a rare rainy day in spring of 2020, a few days before the world changed. I can't wait to get back and just, I want to have time to just soak it in, because I feel as though it's worked, where the design of that land in, for me, Disneyland down the road in Anaheim and the books, it's worked where I buy in completely to the fantasy of it. And to spend more time in a different era and learn more about it, I asked the question because it's like, I actually smile when I see it's going to Batu. And I know that's not for everybody. And I know not everyone's going to experience that. I know not everyone's been fortunate enough to go to Galaxy's Edge in either location. Totally get that. But I don't know. It's just something that's actually kind of fun, and I like the synergy of it.
Yeah, I mean, I think going to there in different eras, seeing how this, you know, the long-term, you know, somewhat timeless culture there has changed or evolved, seeing it through other people's eyes, all that stuff is the kind of the opposite of just like, and you can buy this kind of thing there from this vendor, and you really can. To me, all this stuff is the opposite. It's the narrative selling point. It's the part that makes Batu an interesting and important part of Star Wars storytelling, even if you can never go. And it's the part that makes it more rich. If you've read some of these books and you're walking the streets where Vi-Morati stood up to the First Order, and now where these, you know, High Republic Jedi had this life-changing experience on over on this corner, then you get to feel that when you go to Disney, and the really pure, like, this is a narrative experiment. That's the part where it sings. And there's always going to be some capitalism. It is capitalism.
Yeah.
But you want the narrative weight to give it meaning and power, and these kind of books do it.
Yeah. And like, look, you know, you and I have had wonderful jobs in our life that are completely artistic and creative. Force Center is our own. We get to do kind of what we want, but at the same time, we have to be conscious of the different opinions out there, and we try to toe those lines. And then sometimes you get jobs where you're paid to do something like this. Hey, we want you to sell this land, and you have to make that work. And mm-hmm. they've made it work, right? Like I started radio where I had to write commercials for mattress companies and had to make it creative. I recently had a job where I had to do that, where I had to take something pretty heartfelt and political and tie it into a car. Like I'm fascinated by it. And I just think that this comes down the chain, not necessarily from Kathleen Kennedy or Bob Iger, but just it comes down the road. We've got this land at this theme park, and we need to tie it into stories. And then you as an artist are given the opportunity to do that. And you're right. It's synergy, it's corporate synergy, it's capitalism, but it's also, you can still make it creative. And I don't know. And Batu rant. I've always liked the way they've handled it.
Yeah, absolutely. So yeah, I'm really intrigued by that, and it's got a great title. And yeah, the Cataclysm. Axel Gray. Like, agree with you. A great name. Very intriguing of the combination, the intersection of politics and the Jedi with the Chancellor's son going around with a lightsaber. Excited to see what that's all about. And then my reaction to everything else is that's a lot. I got a lot of reading to do.
That's a lot. I went to the mailbox center, and Path of Deceit showed up, and I just kind of went, "Oh, this is great. Oh man, we got homework. Oh, we got homework."
Yeah, I was really excited. The cover looks great. I was happy to pick it up, and I was like, "We really need to read Padawan first."
Yeah, because I want to give Padawan its due and its respect, and find out for myself what I think about some of the things of that book. So we're gonna get there. Trust. We appreciate your patience, for Center fans. We really do.
Yeah.
All right. Well, Joseph, unless you have any final thoughts there, that is our look at Star Wars book news.
No, let's move on.
We are about ready to close the show out here. But as we do, we're going to take a look at some Star Wars history this week in Star Wars history, looking ahead to Star Wars past. And well, we're not quite done with books. On October 12th, 1982, Del Rey published one of the most celebrated books in the Star Wars fandom, The Jedi Master's Quiz Book by 11-year-old Rusty Miller. His real name is Matt Miller. The book was one of the earliest pieces of Star Wars-related content, celebrating what is now commonplace, loving Star Wars through trivia. Mm-hmm. Here's what Matt said about the book's origins. I actually never really got any feedback regarding those wrong answers. This is how there were some errors in the book. Sorry,
Okay.
Wrong quote in. Gosh, Ken, quit flying to New York. He wrote some of the, here's how I was researching it. He wrote some of the questions, sent it to Del Rey, his mom or something, sent it to Del Rey. And Del Rey looked at it and went, hey, sounds good. He submitted like 600 plus questions and ended up being a 425 question quiz book. There were some errors. This is the quote I also pulled. He said, I actually never really got any feedback regarding those, and was told that Lucasfilm had researched all the questions and answers for correctness. Then he says, hey, it's a 0.004% error rate. Not bad for an 11-year-old. Yeah, there's some wrong answers in there, which are fascinating. Trust me, as someone who submitted a Star Wars book that had a couple weird factual errors that slipped past me and editors, I understand the pain, because you're constantly reminded of it, where you're like, I know that. It slipped through. I typed the wrong thing. Sorry for the bungling of the quote there, Joseph. What is our relationship with this book? Let's start there.
It's just a warm, warm memory, this book, in every way. So I don't know if I had it as a kid. I think I flipped through it. I think I had to choose between that and, like, you know, some toy or another book. But I remember seeing it. I remember flipping through it and wanting, you know, to know all the answers and being really gratified when I did. And mm-hmm. and then excited to learn things that I maybe didn't know. And I think you and I have talked about a lot. Every original Star Wars book back then, mm-hmm. you know, said from the adventures of Luke Skywalker, and it was just a time and an era where you felt like there are all these Star Wars books.
Yeah,
if I could just find them at the used bookstore, right? Mm-hmm. And I think that feeling the feeling that just Star Wars storytelling is, creates with the tip of the iceberg mood, where you always want to know more. There's this kind of feeling that there's always more to know. And I think that's the way I responded to the existence of this book and flipping through it, of like, I had no idea. I didn't process at all that a kid wrote this, you know. Yeah. It was just like, these are facts from the mystical universe of Star Wars, and I could know more things. And I believe there's a question about Yoda's cane, and I had just read the Empire Strikes Back novelization, and I was thrilled that I knew it was a gimmer stick.
Right, right.
You know, and I remember that pride, even though I had no one to tell or who would care, and I might in fact suffer consequences for going around telling people that Yoda's cane is a gimmer stick. I remember being just thrilled that I knew that.
It's funny, I'm staring at my gimmer stick that I got from Galaxy's Edge right here next to my studio. I love that there might have been consequences for knowing that, which is very real. Very real.
Yeah, so that was kind of my relationship as a kid. Yeah. And then I have a real happy memory of this bookstore that I love in Minneapolis, Uncle Hugo's, Uncle Edgar's, that one of the last times I visited, I took my wife and my in-laws, her mom and dad, and we had just a great several hours in Uncle Hugo's, and I bought a copy of the quiz book for myself and for you. Yes. At Uncle Hugo's, and that's just like such a happy memory.
It's great. Yeah. Yes. Tracy, my, relationship with this book, I had it. And I think I really do think this is where I picked up the idea of to know Star Wars is to know trivia, which, you know, is you can look at that different ways. And because, you know, later on in our lives, you and I competing for titles in Schmodowns and, you know, people can go to Dragon Con and win things. It should always be done with the spirit of fun. And that should have never, I really believe trivia should not be taken as understanding Star Wars, but that sounds really adult and a little bit cynical for me. Right. You know, I don't want to sound too negative, but the fun of it started with this book. Mm-hmm. And the fun of what you're talking about, I know what this is. Came from this book. And also say this, my relationship to this book has always been warm and fun. And what I mean by that is, I don't know, I'm a comic, and comics sometimes, you know, Joseph, you've been around it. We can just sometimes be inherently jealous and not even aware of it, right? Like, the story of meeting you at LA Comic Con was like, I went to see a panel with Matt Key and the late great Grant Imahara, and you're on there. I'm like, who's this funny guy? Oh, this guy's really funny. Oh, he's too funny for me to hate. Like, it's just, it's how it works. But I never felt that flipping on the back and looking at a 11-year-old kid who at the time is older than me by a few years by the time this book comes out. Mm. But I never felt like, why does he get to do this? I was like, oh, I kind of want to do this. And
oh, that's great.
I cherish that for this book too, where little Kenny wasn't as jealous and cynical yet. That came later on, but the book is warm.
Yeah, and just like it's strange that it exists, that I love Star Wars this much, and then I got this book published as a kid. It's just, it's so pure. And then I think there was a search for him, the search to find Rusty Miller, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, and I'd used it in comedy shows, like doing live episodes of my podcast Obsessed, and like kind of setting it up and seeing, you know, who remembered and explaining, like, some people in the audience remembered and other people are like, what are you talking about? Like, it's a trivia book from, you know, the 80s written by an 11-year-old. How hard could it be, right? And you just you set people up for, like, these are some devastating questions from young Rusty Miller.
Totally is. And so here's the story. Currently, I have three of these books in my collection. Here's how this happened. I had the original for a long time, and at some point, maybe, I don't know what happened to it. And then you come back with a gift, just a sparkling version of it, just great, pristine condition you gave me. So I was like, oh my gosh, I'm reunited with this book. And at some point, a Force Center listener, I think, said, oh, I hear Ken doesn't have this anymore. And they gifted me with one. So that one arrived later. And then in moving storage boxes from one spot to another, I found the original. So I have all three of them here in my house right now.
You have a trilogy, the entire trilogy.
I have a trilogy. And I think the one that you got me is out in my living room. But I am currently staring across to a bookshelf with my original one, which is a little beat up, but it's there. So I love that there. Yeah, that's great. Love it. This was very fun. And I'm sure, you know, we talk about generations of Star Wars fans. There's some folks who might be hearing about this for the first time, and others of you who are reaching to pull it off your own shelf. And that is part of the fun.
Yeah. Absolutely. It is a great read if you're a Star Wars fan of any age.
It is indeed. We are almost out of here. That is a look at Star Wars history. I want to thank you all for bearing with us for our travel schedules, our bungling through preparing news while traveling. We appreciate your overall support. We are Force Center, and you can find us on Twitter at Force Center Pod. We're on Instagram and YouTube as well. We will have an October live Q&A soon, so subscribe over there so you don't miss that broadcast. We are on Facebook at Force Center Podcast. Our podcast is available at Acast, iHeartRadio, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, and more. Just search. You'll find us. We have merch available at tpublic.com/user/Force Center. And I will be honest, if you want some, I'd swing over there now to check on if there's any shirt designs you want to get, because a lot more are being pulled down if they're tied to Star Wars at all. I'm not throwing any slings and arrows at anyone over there in the big companies, but just kind of the way of it. So some of the designs, including recently our Force Center logo one, were pulled down. We'll find ways to get them out there. But I would suggest if you want a Force Center shirt, swing over there and check it out at tpublic.com/user/Force Center. You can support us directly at patreon.com/Force Center. You can follow me at Cadnapsock. Go to my website, cadnapsock.com, for information on upcoming comedy shows in La Jolla, California, this coming weekend, and Seattle at the end of the month. Joseph, where can they find and follow you? Especially now that you got short films and all these wonderful things going on.
Yeah, so you can follow me as always on all the social media, Twitter, Instagram, TikTok is at Joseph Scrimshaw. But in particular, if you'd like to check out my YouTube channel, you can just go to YouTube and search Joseph Scrimshaw. I've got some new stuff that's up there now, and I got some more stuff coming. I put out a comedy video for Halloween called Flakes of Death. I'm obsessed with this one particular box of Frosted Flakes Halloween cereal. So it's a little comedy piece on that, and I'm also posting older episodes of my podcast, Obsessed. This morning, I just published an interview I did with Jennifer. I don't even remember what year, about her obsession with a DIY project. So that is up there. And some more fun films with some people that you recognize will be coming soon. I'm also going to be reworking my Patreon. So if you want to check out that as well, you can go to patreon.com/Joseph Scrimshaw. So that is it for me, Ken.
That's wonderful. Thank you all for listening. We appreciate your support. Start reading them books. We'll see you next time here on Force Center.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. Hello Fresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. Hello Fresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Welcome to Sincerely Sloan, presented by Uninterrupted. I'm your host, professional tennis player, wife, parent, and entrepreneur, Sloan Stevens. As an athlete and as a person, my journey has had a lot of twists and turns, from moments of adversity and doubt to unimaginable triumph and satisfaction. Throughout the season, I'm joined by some of the biggest names in sports, entertainment, culture, and a few members of my tribe. Our conversations keep it real and push it past skin deep. We reveal the perspectives, routines, and products that allow each of us to show up at our best. Join me on my journey of self-discovery and many, many laughs along the way. Sincerely, Sloan.
Ever Googled your own name? Prepare for a shock, because your personal info, including addresses and phone numbers, is out there, especially with the recent hacks at some big phone and healthcare companies. But here's where Aura steps in. Aura scans the dark web for your sensitive information and sends real-time alerts. Aura also actively requests that your information be removed from data broker sites, putting you back in control. Aura provides you with a complete online safety toolkit, credit and transaction monitoring, a secure password manager, a privacy-enhancing VPN, parental controls, and more. Try Aura risk-free with a 14-day trial at aura.com/safety. That's aura.com/safety. Rest easy with Aura. Visit aura.com/safety today.